This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A funeral may be one of the most expensive purchases a family makes, and the embalming, expensive coffins and concrete vaults are designed to prevent the dead from returning to dust. My guest Mark Harris has been looking at cheaper and more natural and environmental alternatives to the funeral industry send-off, including cremation, burials at sea, and the new green burial movement. Harris has written a new book called Grave Matters, A Journey Through the Modern Funeral Industry to a Natural Way of Burial. He's a former environmental columnist for the Los Angeles Times Syndicate. Mark Harris, welcome to Fresh Air. Before we talk about some of the alternatives to the kind of funeral industry approach to burial, let's talk about some of the aspects of the funeral industry that are seen by many as being problems. The casket and the embalming process are designed in a way to prevent the body from returning to the earth.
Well, that's certainly true, and I think it says a lot about what we as Americans have wanted from a funeral. And in some ways, that's because I don't think we know what the alternatives are. The American funeral has developed from more natural roots. I mean, when you look back at the American funeral at the beginning of our country's founding, it really was a dust-to-dust kind of burial. A family would wash and dress a body at home. They would lay it out in the front parlor, and then they would place the body in a vaultless grave in a very pine casket, and it would invite the elements. We have lots of reasons why this is different now, and in some ways, I think it's because we have wandered into a kind of modern burial that works in some ways at cross purposes to what we want.
Now, cemeteries, particularly the more high-priced ones, are designed to look like parks or lawns and are named accordingly. But what are some of the environmental issues beneath the surface?
Well, when you look at some of the environmental aspects of the modern funeral, I mean, I think they're really of the same kind and order that you'd expect of any large-scale industrial operation. I mean, if you look at some of the numbers, the typical 10-acre swatch of cemetery ground contains enough coffin wood to construct more than 40 houses, nearly 1,000 tons of casket steel, and another 20,000 tons of vault concrete. If you add to that a volume of toxic formalin, that's nearly sufficient to fill a small backyard swimming pool. And then on top of that, you've got untold gallons of pesticide and weed killer that are used to keep the cemetery grounds really preternaturally green.
Of course, what a lot of people object most to about the standard funeral now is the price. What's the average cost of a funeral in the United States now?
Yeah, the average cost, according to the Funeral Directors Association, is around $6,500 to $7,000. Now, that does not include the cost of the cemetery, so that doesn't include, say, the burial vault. It doesn't include the cost of digging the grave and closing the grave, the mounting of the foundation for the headstone, the cost of the headstone. So when you look at it in actual dollars, the average cost of the standard funeral runs close to $10,000.
You follow one specific funeral from start to finish.
Yeah.
In the book, break down some of the costs within that funeral for us.
When you walk into a funeral home, the funeral director by law is required to hand you a general price list of goods and services. And when I wrote this book, I went around to a bunch of funeral homes and I asked them to hand me that sheet. When you look at the sheet, it runs front and back, and there are quite a number of things. It starts with embalming, which is the bedrock of the funeral industry, and you're looking at least in the sheets that I saw, you're looking at something close to $800, some less, some more. And then, you look at the hairstyling, to turning over to a beautician is $90. You're casketing the remains, actually putting the body in the box is, $50. And then depending on what kind of viewing that you want to have, if you want to hold it at the funeral home, if you want to hold it into the church itself, you're looking at around $400. The bigger cost, the major cost is really the coffin. And the prices here range very widely from your basic coffin. You can spend a couple of thousand dollars. And these are wood coffins. And if you want to have something more elaborate, you start getting into metal coffins, and then you get copper coffins and ones that are virtually indestructible. You're looking at close to $10,000. When you get to the cemetery itself, some of the plots of this, at the cemetery ground that I looked at in our general area, they were close to $1,000. But even for that basic price, it doesn't cover half the price of what you're paid to actually bury somebody in the cemetery.
Let's look at some of the alternatives to the standard cemetery funeral that you describe in your book. You know, you devote a whole chapter to cremation. Is cremation considered like an environmentally correct alternative to funeral industry burials?
When you look at cremation and you see the resources and the polluted generation that are generated in the course of cremating a body, I think it's significantly less than the resources and pollution that's generated in the course of outfitting and conducting the modern American funeral. So I include it, but it's true that on a continuum of green burials, if you look at cremation on one end and burial in someone's rural backyard or in one of these natural cemeteries, cremation certainly is on the low side. Cremation does require some resources. Generally, natural gas and electricity sufficient to create temperatures in a hearth of 1600 to 1800 degrees for the better part of 2 hours in most cases. And it does create some, it does generate some pollution. It does send some pollutants up the smokestack. The pollutant that's of most concern is mercury. Mercury is a component of the silver fillings that many of us baby boomers have in our mouths. And cremation, the high temperatures in the retort, vaporizes the mercury in our mouths and sends it up the smokestack, where it's caught by the prevailing winds, and then it's deposited over the ground and over bodies of water. There it's taken up by fish, and since it doesn't biodegrade, it remains with them. And when we eat fish, we consume a portion of that mercury.
Well, so that's all from the fillings in our teeth.
That's all from the fillings in our teeth. Whether or not it's a big issue depends on whose figures you believe. Now, the EPA, in conjunction with the cremation industry, has found that we don't really generate that much mercury via crematoria in the United States. Other groups have contended that we generate a lot more than that. Great Britain, for one, where 70% of the population is cremated, believes that the issue there is significant enough that the government is requiring its crematoria to cut mercury emissions in half by the year 2012.
How do cremation costs compare with the kind of typical, the average cemetery burial?
The average cremation cost is about $1,400. It can be significantly less if you go through a funeral home, perhaps that owns its own crematoria, or if you are a member of a memorial society, which may have made arrangements with a local crematoria or funeral home to guarantee prices that are significantly less than that. So you may pay somewhere on the order of $500 or less.
Now, you've also looked at natural cemeteries. What makes a cemetery a natural cemetery?
That's a really good question. The cemetery that I saw in, I've seen a couple of these, but the one that I visited first in Ramsey Creek in South Carolina, the first natural cemetery in the United States, opened to burials in 1998, is a pine forest of some 30 acres with a dirt trail that winds through it. The bodies go into the ground unembalmed. Coffins, when used at all, are of minimal make, fashioned from cardboard or simple pine in most cases. Vaults are banned. You can't have any plastic flowers. And the goal there is clearly to allow the body to return to the elements as directly and simply as possible, to return, as that Genesis verse, to return dust to dust. I went down in 2003 for a visit, and this was the genesis of this book. I walked the grounds with the co-founder, Kimberly Campbell, who founded Ramsey Creek with her husband, Billy. And it was so apparently a place of life, not of death. It's a place where death is celebrated as a natural part of life, where death becomes a natural, the body can join the natural cycle of life at death. And it seems a really struck me as being a really logical thing to do. So that is the best of the natural cemeteries. Now, we used to have cemeteries like this in the United States. There was a whole movement in the early to late 1800s called the Rural Cemetery Movement, where we looked to move cemeteries, crowded cemeteries, out of the cities and move them into more natural locales. We began establishing those there, and Ramsey Creek is really an attempt to do that in our own modern time.
So what are some of the differences between like this new type of environmentally correct natural cemetery and the older cemeteries before all the modernizing materials and stuff existed?
The rural cemeteries of the mid 1800s. They had many of the same natural components that we've talked about with the natural cemeteries of today. A couple of things do set them apart. The Ramsey Creek model and natural cemetery model, the best of those, seek to use burials and this designation of a cemetery ground as a way to preserve land. So, in the case of Ramsey Creek, Billy Campbell, who owned this property, wanted to preserve it from development, so he turned a large chunk of it into a cemetery. It's a very compelling scheme for preserving land. Also, Billy Campbell took it a step further, and he uses burials as part of a ecological restoration plan. So that it's not just that you're given a green burial in a green space that protects the land from development, but Billy brings in local scientists and biologists to construct a science-based plan for the ecological restoration of the land, to return the land to its more natural state. So he cites graves and places that could best use nourishment. He allows only plants on the graves that are drawn from a palette of plants that are native to the area. So you have two things going on here in this new version of the rural cemetery. You have protection of land, and you also have restoration of land.
And in those new cemeteries, are there markers where you know your loved one is buried and you can go visit them at that site?
Yes, at Ramsey Creek, there are flat field stones that are generally collected on site. They're native to the stratum, the ecological stratum, and they're set flush to the ground. They do serve as headstones, but of course, over time, they themselves will weather into the landscape. Billy Campbell expects them to last probably no longer than 100 years. He does, in that case, have a GPS system that marks each gravesite, so future generations could come back and via GPS find the exact location of the grave of someone who had been buried there.
Boy, that's wishful thinking that the technology 100 years from now will be able to translate today's GPS system. Anyways, we'll let that go. Well, some people are trying to do home burials now, which is, of course, a very old idea. But what are the laws now about home burials? Are there laws that define how and when and where you can do that?
There are various state and local laws that need to be taken into consideration, but generally home burials are allowed in the vast majority of states. I think the first thing that I learned when I was beginning working on this book that I think surprised me and surprised many of the people who were first reading this book is that embalming, which obviously can only be done by a funeral director, is almost never required. So if you don't need to embalm a body, and family members and friends can die at home, then there's no reason really to call the funeral director. You can conduct many of these. You can wash and you can lay a body out in your own home. The families that I interviewed held bodies for a good couple of days, up to a week in some cases, where the body was laid on a bed of dry ice. The wake was held in the home. Visitors came and went, paid their respects to the family, they conducted it out of their home. There are various laws that you do have to follow. A family member can, in many cases, fill out the death certificate him or herself in lieu of the funeral director. The death certificate does need to be filed with the proper authorities. Someone does need to come in, usually from the medical establishment, to pronounce the death, to say that a death did occur. various papers need to be filed afterwards, but it can be done, and it was done very successfully by many of the families that I interviewed for the book.
Now, you also looked at something called memorial reefs. Tell us what these are and if they're like a new concept.
It is a new concept. It's a take on burial at sea, but it's a new idea. This is where the ashes of the cremated remains of the deceased are added to the concrete slurry that's poured into a mold that forms what looks like an igloo that somebody's punched a bunch of holes into. Over a period of the month, that concrete, what they call memorial reef ball, dries. It's put on a boat. You go out with the boat and you drop it onto an established artificial reef. When it sinks to the reef, it becomes part of the reef and ends up serving as habitat for fish.
And why is that considered environmentally correct, to be dropping, a concrete ball into a reef?
Yes. I mean, what you're actually doing is you're augmenting existing reef structure. And what's interesting, Terry, is you look at some underwater videos of some of these pods of memorial reefs that have been sitting on the sandy sea floor for a while. You'll see fish darting in and out of these portals. You'll see coral and anemone latching on to the hard, nubby substrate of these reef balls, and they really do serve as nurseries for fish. They create new habitat for fish.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Mark Harris. He's the author of the new book, Grave Matters, A Journey Through the Modern Funeral Industry to a Natural Way of Burial. How did writing this book affect your thoughts on how you want to be buried when you die? Or buried, I mean, not necessarily buried, what you want done with your remains when you die?
That's a good question. The first funeral I ever witnessed was my mother's when I was 16 years old. My parents had divorced, and my grandfather was I was living with my father, and my grandfather was handling the funeral arrangements. And I'll never forget what it was like going to the funeral home where my mother was laid out. My father, before we walked into the funeral home, my father said, "Listen, I don't want you to go in there. I don't want your last memory being of your mother of someone in a box." And so I never viewed my mother. Contrary to what some people might think about the importance of actually seeing a dead body at the time of death, I never did see my mother embalmed and viewed and dead, and I don't feel I missed out on anything. As for myself, it has made me think about what I would like. I'd always assumed that I would be cremated, which is sort of a tradition on my father's side of the family. But after visiting the woodland burial grounds or these natural cemeteries that are cropping up in this country, there is something so totally resonant about that dust-to-dust burial in a green place, using a burial to preserve land and to aid its ecological restoration, that has made me really consider that as an option for myself.
Now, your great-grandfather founded a cemetery, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. He founded Whitehaven Memorial Park in Pittsford, New York.
And what kind of cemetery is it? Is it a high price cemetery?
It's interesting, Terry. After writing this book and kind of understanding a little bit about what my great grandfather did, he was part of the movement of people who moved away from the rural cemeteries that I've been celebrating in this book. He was one of the first to establish what are known as memorial parks, which are vast expanses of green with the headstones set flush to the ground. In some ways, they are, they're green and they're park-like, but they're not at all natural in a way that the rural cemeteries were or as the natural cemeteries are today.
And how did having a great-grandfather who co-founded a cemetery affect your ideas about cemeteries when you were growing up? Some people find cemeteries very spooky. Other people find them almost spiritual.
It affected me in a couple of ways, mostly through my father, who worked on the cemetery grounds as a teenager, and he would sometimes regale me with stories about what it was like to dig graves and to actually collapse some of the grave sites that had wooden coffins in order to allow the dirt to sink in and fill in the declivity. In another way, I do think that grave sites can be wonderful places to visit and reconnect with family that you have known and family that you don't know, and it can connect you to generations long gone by. It gives you a place to return to. And I think in that way, we would occasionally return to this cemetery, and I have to say that it's still, despite it not being kind of the natural cemetery that I myself would want to be laid to rest in, it still can be a very moving place for me personally.
Mark Harris, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Mark Harris is the author of the new book, Grave Matters, A Journey Through the Modern Funeral Industry to a Natural Way of Burial.